Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another video and podcast from Fantasy Football Scout. There's no Sam or Az this week, so you lucky people have got us two. My name is Joe and today I'm joined by David to answer your questions as we look ahead to FPL Game Week 5. David, welcome. How are you?
Very good, thank you. It feels like a bit of a flashback here because I'm the guest today and you're the host, which very much used to be how things used to be when we did the captaincy video back in the day.
I was indeed.
But yeah, I've been sort of... Yeah, the good old days, the halcyon days of Fantasy Football Scout, of course. It's an unfortunate situation this week. I've had some computer problems. People will have noticed I've been on the channel a little bit less. So while I'm on air, I just want to say thank you to Joe and Karen for stepping in and recording some content. And yeah, I can guest on things. I can be in things like Zoom, but outside of that, I'm a little bit limited. So nice to be in the guest chair today because it means I'm not pressing quite as many buttons.
Okay, and before we crack on with your questions, before I welcome those who've joined us in the live chat, I understand you've got a few words to say from one of our sponsors, David.
Yes, that's correct, yeah. And so today's video is sponsored by Betway, the principal betting partners of West Ham, betting partner of Brighton. On Friday, they announced their Heroes for the weekend. You bet £10 on player markets, top scorer of the Heroes, and they will credit a £1 free bet for every point up to £20. Betway are also running giveaways, including shirts and tickets for West Ham and Brighton, two popular teams in FPL right now. We know not everyone gambles, which is why we take it very seriously. It's why we have on our website a filter that you can turn on that allows you to opt out of gambling ads. For those who do enjoy it, do it responsibly and safely. There's more info about Betway in the description. You, of course, have to be 18 or over to play, and we encourage everybody to gamble responsibly and to be gambleaware.org. When the fun stops, stop. But I suppose the fun never stops when it comes to FPL, especially when there's questions, Joe, and there's going to be lots of them today, we hope.
Yes, indeed. Just before we crack on, just want to welcome those joining us in the live chat. FPL Big Head, Sukan, Geo Boys, John Robert Knight, Barry Coleman. It's very formal, giving all their surnames as well. Aslak, Dennis Helangizi. Apologies, I've butchered your name possibly, but welcome all of you early birds in the live chat. Get some questions in, put some questions in, and so I can easily see them, put a question mark at the end because if it's just sort of a comment, because then my instinct, I'll just read them out. And don't be rude as well, because by instinct, I'll just read it out. But yeah, just do put your questions in there. I'll come to that. We do have a couple of questions already. I put up a tweet earlier, and it's your favourite subject, goalkeepers, from Jack Brokenshire. He says, looking forward to the show. I shall start. Should I start Onana or Turner this week? And on a similar theme, for reasons unknown, ask best goalkeeper combination on a game week 5 wildcard. So thinking much more long term, not just best for game week 5 or whether you're looking at Onana or Turner, but best for many, many weeks to come. Who would you, first of all, we'll go for the Onana Turner one. Who would you play out of those two? And then and then you give your, who you would have your best combination be?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say United defensively this season have been very disappointing. And I've said that a couple of weeks ago, it feels like a couple of weeks ago, the first half of the international break. We're talking about Johnny Evans. I've always rated Johnny Evans, but if that's who they're relying on now, it's a bit concerning. He looks like, the picture of him in the current kit looks like it should be a testimonial game. It just looks like too much of a mind-bending event to see him looking the way that he is in a full Premier League kit. It's crazy. But not to put it all on him. As I said, I've got a lot of respect for him, but he's not as young as he was.
No.
But they've had other problems outside of that as well, defensively. I'd be very concerned if I had Onana right now. And to be honest, I'd probably be selling him Just looking at the fixture, I mean, it's Brighton in game week 5. Mm-hmm. Brighton have been in exceptional form at their offensive end of the pitch. I mean, you've obviously gone into detail on a few bits and pieces this week, Joe, that defensively Brighton aren't as where we'd expect them to be, but it doesn't matter. You're going to score one more than the opponent because your XG is incredible. And so I would probably go for Turner this week, to be honest, because I think the fixture for Forest, really good. Mm. Burnley, I think, need to do a little bit of work to get ready to be back at Premier League level. Forest's defensive numbers have been quite solid in the start of the season, and they're always, always much better at the City Ground. So it feels weird to do it, doesn't it? Because Onana's a lot more expensive. But I'm currently starting Turner this week, and I don't have Onana. But if I did have them both, I would be starting Turner.
I have this exact rubbish combination of Onana and Turner, and I indeed am also going to field Turner. Now, here's a caveat. I could end up playing Onana anyway. Two things have happened to Turner recently. I understand his wife has given birth to their second child, which could mean he'll do an amazing save and then do a nice baby celebration. Or he just won't turn up because he was off for personal reasons, which I presume was that the United States, who he's, of course, the national goalkeeper for. The other factor is they've Nottingham Forest have just signed another goalkeeper with Champions League experience, who I was reading today on Twitter by sources at Nottingham Forest is expected to become their main goalkeeper. So at the moment, it's sort of Turner's to lose. He hasn't done anything wrong to lose it. Long term, he will lose it. but also short term, he could be on nappy changing duties. I don't know. So there's lots of doubt there. So I've got Onana ready to go. But as I said, Brighton top form. So yeah, it's a tough one. But long term, goalkeeper, if you you didn't have Turner, you didn't have Onana. If you had a wild card this week, who would that goalkeeper combination be for you?
Well, I don't know about the second choice, but my first choice still actually, to be honest, is Flecken at Brentford. Because I look at the defensive numbers that we've seen at the start of the season, and I just pulled up a few here now. Big chances conceded in the first four matches. Mm. It's just all matches so far, because of course Luton and Burnley have only played three each. But they're not really in this conversation. The top four for this stat: Man City and Newcastle joined best with four conceded each. Then it's Arsenal with five, who were level with Brentford. There doesn't seem to be a massive change in the way that they are playing this season, in the sense that they do actually still concede a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. They have faced 55 shots this season. Only about 6 teams have conceded more shots, but only 2 have given up more big chances. Mm-hmm. And so that is a continuation of the trend we saw last season, mm-hmm. of lots of shots, but the quality of them is very low. And that is like the Goldilocks zone for a goalkeeper. You know, you've got a very good goalkeeper with a bit of distribution attached onto him as well for a bit of extra bonus, because he is good at that as well. That's sort of why they signed him, as a sort of, David Rea 2.0. You attach that to a team that is giving up lots of chances, but not doing it in such a way that it's leading to lots of big goal-scoring opportunities. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And then if that goalkeeper is 4.5, even better, because we saw it a little bit with Pope at Burnley when he was 5.5. We've seen it also with Pope at Newcastle when he's been 5.5. But unfortunately, both of those two teams conceded big chances at a higher rate. And so with that massive gap, they were the biggest team. The team with the biggest gap between shots conceded and biggest chance conceded last season. I haven't actually double-checked it for this season, but the fact that they're like very much in the bottom half for shots conceded, very much top four quality for big chances conceded, it's very clear that he's the guy that's going to get you 4, 3, 4, maybe 5 points when he doesn't keep a clean sheet, 8, 9, 10, 12 points when he does. Okay. So he's the one for me.
Okay. He's not for me, but last time we were together on a show was when it was a sort of a rate my pre-season team, and you asked me this exact question. And I said then, Leno and Areola. And here we are, many, many weeks
here
on,
we are,
and I have not changed. And I do think the best combination is Leno and Areola, and hear me out. I early in the week, I did look at the possibility of Pope, as a good goalkeeper in a Newcastle video we did. So I do urge people to have a look at that. But I was having a look at minutes per save. As with last season, Leno is top. He's the stats king. So he's had one clean sheet, but he's had a minutes per save, a save every 16.4 minutes. Also, he's top for expected goals prevented. This is him actively preventing a goal. And he's actively prevented just him two goals. So they would be two goals more down if it wasn't for him. So that, he's great. And traditionally, I've always gone for those types of stats because that says when they get a clean sheet, he's going to get points because he's making lots of saves. And if he doesn't keep a clean sheet, of which he has one out of four so far, and a much maligned Fulham defence, he's going to get going to rack up the save points and therefore bonus points. However, Fulham have conceded ten goals this season so far. So that is worth pointing out. He would be the top there. And I would pair him with Areola, who is not too shabby with four goals conceded. Just four. No clean sheets, though. But a minutes per save every 22.5. You're loving this. This is goalkeeper central, this show. Expected goals prevented 1.6. That's what he's actively done. That's really good stats for the first four. The other benefit of that is the rotation is beautiful. West Ham, game week 5, they've got Man City. They've got Liverpool in game week 6. Does not matter because Fulham have Luton and then they have Crystal Palace. These are, potential for clean sheets there. Good fixtures. And then you look back to, basically I would play Areola most of the time. So Areola, I think, is going to be in a better defence. And then, say, Newcastle, game week 8. I don't want to play Areola, but as luck would have it, Leno is playing Sheffield United that week. So it's just a really nice combination. So if I was wildcarding game week 5, I'll get Leno and Areola. I've made my case.
Yeah. Areola actually will be my second choice goalkeeper when I do wildcard. I agree with everything you said there. Yeah. I think, I had a little look at this on the member stream last week with Andy. And so if you've not had a chance to check out the member stream, if you're a member, then do check them out. They're on Friday nights. Or alternatively, if you're not a member yet, it's one of the many benefits you can get from being in there. Areola definitely ticked a lot of boxes for a lot of the really niche stats you've mentioned there.
Yeah.
He wasn't necessarily the king of any of them, but that doesn't matter with a goalkeeper. They need to sort of be top 4 or 5 for lots of different avenues of points. I agree. Areola is very much on my mind as well.
Yeah, definitely. And, traditionally, I've always gone for like the Southampton goalkeeper, the Bournemouth goalkeeper, the Portsmouth one. Not just the South Coast thing. I just go for them because they concede a lot of shots and they're usually good goalkeepers. And that's what you want. You want David James, basically. Portsmouth David James is my pinnacle of a goalkeeper in FPL. Let's move on to some other questions. Let's forget goalkeepers. So if any more goalkeeper questions, then we might skip them because we've probably done 12 minutes on goalkeepers already. So FPL Big had asked, am I too early? No, you're never too early. But Geo Boys asked, Trippier for Estupinan. Yay or nay? If he could afford it, I would say yay.
Yeah, I think I would as well. I think that's a fixtures pick very much because I think both players are good. I think both players have, some level of form. Mm. I think a lot of us are looking for an Estupinan out plan because Brighton's fixtures are getting a little bit more challenging. And crucially, we did allude to it earlier on, Brighton are conceding chances at a much faster rate than perhaps is necessarily obvious when you look at their results, I guess. So I don't think Estupinan is this guy that we can rely on for clean sheets and goals as much as we could last season, because clearly there's just something there that means that Brighton aren't a defence-first team anymore. No. And that seems to be working. De Zerbi, I don't think he's unhappy with that. I guess you as a fan, Joe, probably aren't either. You're not unhappy either. So
I don't mind. Attack away. just win everything 5-4.
Yeah, exactly. And most fans aren't going to mind that. So, I don't think there's any pressure on him to make some changes there. So, I think that Trippier and people from the Newcastle defence, I think over the next run of games, when you look at the swing on the ticker as well, Newcastle, there's more upside there. There is, I suppose, more risk that comes with this because the Champions League is going to start to be involved. Mm. And the thing about Newcastle's group is that it is horrible. I mean, Newcastle fans probably don't mind. If they were going to come back to the Champions League, I'm sure they'd much rather face PSG and AC Milan than, just those teams you never heard of that somehow scrape in and always end up in Man City's group. I'm sure they'd much rather that. But I imagine that just they're going to throw everything at those games, I think. And so when the rotation comes in, I mean, we have to only speculate at this point because we've not seen any of the European football. It's actually why I don't want a wild card this week. I want to see how it settles. Yeah. But like Livramento, I mean, he's a perfect Premier League starter if you're going to play Trippier in the European games, who obviously is much more experienced. You know, he's a World Cup semi-finalist goal scorer, you know, for example, and has played on the continent, you know, played for Atletico Madrid for a while. So he is just the obvious starter for the Champions League games.
And if they need to rest him,
if they need to rest him, then it's Livramento is not actually that much of a downgrade. You know, he's more of a domestic. I've seen him as more of a domestic player. So it's a tricky one because I'm not going to get rid of a Stupinan anytime soon. I'm just going to bench him and I'm going to wait to see how the Newcastle defence settles. I've actually got a lot of money in my bank, so I'm tempted to perhaps use my Salah money, which I already got rid of him, to upgrade Gabriel to a Newcastle defender. I think it's a wait and see. It's a wait and see. I mean, to be honest, Estupinan could get something against United, right? So if you end up starting Estupinan against United, it's not the worst thing in the world because his creative stats are also pretty good as well. So that was a bit of a non-answer, I appreciate, but there's lots of considerations with this.
There is. I can't see many clean sheets for Estupinan, but for those playing FPL bingo, I'm about to say it. Estupinan at this stage is more or less a winger, and that's what he is. So you're looking for attacking points there. Newcastle's fixtures, they got Brentford next. That's tricky. I don't expect a clean sheet there. But then they got Sheffield United, Burnley, West Ham. That could be tricky. Crystal Palace, Wolves, right up to game week 10. That's a great run of fixtures there. There's a lot of clean sheet potential there. But Trippier, as you said, he's going to be the Champions League guy. However, I don't know if you've seen the All or Nothing documentary on Amazon about Newcastle, which has been heavily edited, as you would expect for those documentaries. But I'm convinced that Trippier is actually a robot, so I don't actually acknowledge that he'll get fatigue. He is just completely driven, while his body can, to playing football at the highest level he can constantly, and he doesn't seem to have anything else. Even though he's got his family, and his family wanted to move back here, but he's very, very driven and very robotic, and so I can't see him giving up his shirt many
times. Nice bit of insight there.
A bit like Harry Kane. You know, he's just driven. Just I can't see him rested too much. What he might do though is come off every around 70 minute mark. We did see that last season, and that could be good. So that's why I think at the moment
they bank the clean sheet.
I personally would like to wait a week or two. And you know, miss out on a couple of fixtures of that good run, but it gives that information because it's a lot of money to invest. It's a big upgrade, that £1.5 million. But yeah, you're completely right about looking at the Brighton and my screen just went funny there. The Brighton and Newcastle defensive stats, because Brighton are one of the worst defences so far this season, with a minutes per expected goal. They've expected to concede a goal every 48.8 minutes, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the sixth worst. Meanwhile, Newcastle have had tough fixtures, including against Brighton, but their minutes per expected goals conceded is much better, 78.6 minutes. They have conceded 7 goals so far, Brighton 6. So those underlying stats tell you a better story than the actual whether they've scored a goal. So that says Newcastle defence is strong, robust, and they could keep Brentford at bay. I hope they keep Mbomo at bay because I haven't got him. Let's move on. More questions. Jackson for Alvarez or Awoniyi? Two things going on here. Is it time to get rid of Jackson? We had enough of his fluff chances. And Alvarez just played basically on the moon in Bolivia. Awoniyi is like new Vardy. He just can't stop scoring every week. But what would you make that move now, or would you make that move at all?
I really, really want to own Awoniyi from about game week 9 or 10 when their fixtures get really, really nice. And the reason I want to own him is I feel like we talk about him every week, but he also gets overlooked. He's one of these people that somehow people almost have a colour blindness to. Mm. You know, they sort of just see the red of Nottingham Forest and immediately discard based on the fact that Forest were quite poor for large stages of last season. And I love those sorts of situations when people see the badge and they think about what they've kind of remember of that team, and there's a little bit of confirmation bias in there, and there's a little bit of just kind of complacency, but I'm not insulting people. It's more just the fact that like not everybody has the time to go into the level of detail that we're able to, either if we're making content or people watching this.
No one's got time for the East Midlands anymore. No one cares.
No, well, exactly.
So King John. So Robin Hood. No one cares anymore.
That is very true. Yeah. And so then when we see these stats that come through that suggest that actually there's been a shift, there's been a change. Mm. I like that kind of moment because I think that people will still largely avoid a 1-year. The stats that he's got over the first four matches is 7 shots in the box, 4 big chances, 3 on target. So his goal conversion rate is 42.9%. So I will admit that at this stage, there's a lot of overperformance going on there. Not unlike Avardi back in his heyday when he broke Van Nistelrooy's record. I'm pretty sure it was like 1 shot per game. Yeah. It was a goal. And those sorts of stats are hard to predict an end point for. So I will appreciate there is a little bit of potential statistical anomaly here. But the fixtures are too good. I kind of feel like the fixtures, when they get good, in theory, should actually give a 1-year more opportunity. So I want to own him, but now is not the time. I think game week 9 is when you go for it.
Definitely.
I mean, Chelsea's fixtures are really good for now, and they get worse around the same time. Yeah. So Jackson to a 1-year makes a lot more sense in about game
week
9.
That's game week 10. Q&A, that is. With Burnley up next for 1 year, it's a great thing to get it. Great time to get him for one match, and then he plays City, so that's not great. And then he's got Brentford, and then Crystal Palace. They're hard to call. Man City is easy to call. They'll beat them. But those other two fixtures are tough to call. Yeah, 25 points. You're right about people are completely ignoring him. I was saying this about Evan Ferguson recently to Tom. It's like in The Usual Suspects. The line that Kevin Spacey uses in that, which is what is the greatest trick the devil ever pulled. To convince the world he didn't exist. A 1-year is the devil, like Evan Ferguson. They've convinced the world they don't exist. Yeah. Meanwhile, Ferguson is only Haaland to score more goals than Ferguson this season. And a 1-year is 3 goals, 25 FPL points.
I think it's 8 games in a row that he scored in as well. So it's getting close to the Vardy record. So.
I think someone was saying game week 35 last season was the last time he scored. So, yeah, we're not doubting it. It's just whether this is a good time to get him in, given that he's got City in game week 6, given that Jackson has Bournemouth, which could be a good fixture. But what will happen in game week 6 Q&A, when Az and Sam are back, they're going to get a whole bunch of questions. Shall I dump Jackson? Because he's missed fluff loads of big chances again. But if he has scored loads, everyone's going to want to get him back in and say sorry to him. So the Jackson thing is really going to be a game week 6. He's a big hold.
His stats are good. So as long as he can just start converting them into goals, I think we should be okay. As long as he doesn't set up his mortgage on the goals imminent table this season. I think we'll be fine. We're hoping he's going to move out, aren't we?
Yeah, well, he was on our ultra differentials table because he was at that stage, he was under 5% owned. I think he may be. But earlier in the week, he was 4.8% owned. So, yes, he is definitely a good asset. And he's, you know, he's got a brace, perhaps even a hat-trick in him. Burnley could be the game to do that. Barry Coleman asks Eze to Son for free. He already has Maddison, so lots going on with that question as well. Son, surely he's going to play up front for Sheffield United against Sheffield United after doing so well last time, and Richarlison having off-field issues. But selling Eze to him, I'm not sure about, especially if you've got Maddison, because in game week 6, like with a 1-year. Game week 6, the fixture's toughen. And so Son has 2 bad games. And so my take is, if you've got Maddison, and given it's just after the international break, we don't know if Son is going to get there, but team news might give it. I would say hold Eze at the moment.
I really like Eze. I think people are down on him. I mean, again, to be honest, it comes down to what people use as a yardstick for success in FPL. I think the fact that he's not achieved what he wants to yet in terms of points makes people think he's not playing well. But he isn't playing badly. He's playing really, really well. He's clearly the best player in that Palace team. Looks exciting every week. And he's basically done everything but score and get an assist. When we have a look at how he compares with Son, so far this season, he's actually supposed to have been involved in more goals. His expected goal involvement is 2.51. Son's is 2.17. Yes, we know Son is on his day a world-class player, so it's not necessarily unsurprising to see Son outperform his XG. We've seen that many times down through the years, so maybe we don't have to read as much as we think into that specific comparison. But the point is, does that make Eze a bad option? No, not at all. In fact, it makes him someone who looks primed and ready to explode at some point. I am fairly confident that when he does start delivering, it's going to be really big, because he is, in my opinion, he has what it takes to actually be a better, more integral part of that Palace team than Zaha ever was. Because obviously he's sort of now the one shouldering the burden of being the talismanic player. Zaha was a very good goal scorer, we know that, but was he necessarily that team's arch creator? Not really.
No.
Eze, however, is seemingly both. Mm-hmm. You know, he is someone who can get lots of goals, but is a very, very good creator as well. He's created more chances than Son this season. He's had more shots in the box than Son this season, and he's had more shots on target as well. The goal conversion rate obviously is much lower, but and a good point on the fixtures as well. I think there is a lot of short-sightedness on the Spurs fixtures because they are going to be tricky.
Yeah,
to put the other side of the coin, the fixtures are tricky on paper, but I don't rate the Arsenal defence that much, especially at the Emirates. I think it's 4 clean sheets in the last 21. Mm-hmm. Liverpool clean sheets haven't been great either. So there's a possibility that Son gets you something, but it will sting, won't it, if it comes at the expense of
it. It doesn't look hauly, though. Sheffield United, great fixture. Arsenal, Liverpool, can't see Son in the scout picks those weeks. Game week 8, now you're talking back to Luton again. So game week 8 is when I am looking at possibly getting Son in, maybe. But, you know, I'm quite happy with my midfielders. If I had a space in midfield at the moment, I would actually go for Eze, not Son. Because, okay, so Eze's got Aston Villa next. But then he's got Fulham, the worst defence at the moment. And then Manchester United. Crystal Palace do well at Manchester United, and their defence is a bit shaky. And then they've got Nottingham Forest at home. So these are great fixtures. And then you can just hop on to whoever then, if you get bored of Eze then. But I actually think Eze's a hold. And next week, I think he's a buy rather than a bye-bye. Sukan, would you bench Gusto Estupinan? We'll be a bit quicker with this one. Who would you bench? Get to bench
am I muted? No, I'm not. Sorry, I wasn't just checking if I'd muted myself. It's tricky, isn't it? Because we think that James might be back. I would start a stupid man. I think he's more likely to start the games. Maybe Gusto gets you something, but I don't know. I think I would be more annoyed with myself if I benched stupid man anymore than if I benched Gusto anymore.
Yeah.
Which is maybe irrational, but that's probably where I'd go.
Yeah, I agree. I think Estupinan's got more attacking threat. I think neither will keep a clean sheet because Chelsea against Solanke, who is a very good player. And like he is Kaiser Sose, he's the greatest trick he ever pulled. Pretend Solanke never existed. Okay.
Here's another one.
I'm just reading through the questions. I can't pronounce his name again. Well, I'm going to give it a go again. Halanganessa? Anyway, you know who you are. Jota or Foden for Madison. He clearly wants to get Madison in. I wouldn't get rid of Jota or Foden for Madison. Darwin Nunez is injured or has an injury. He might be fit for the Liverpool game. But if he isn't, that pretty much, I would say, locks Jota, who scored heavily for Portuguese country midweek, would put him in the driving seat to be the number 9 there against Wolves, his old club. And you all know what happens when players play their old club. So I think Jota's a hold. Foden, possibly Foden for Madison, but that sounds mental.
it does, but it wouldn't necessarily be. I think there's a method to the madness, and it's madness in the mind of some, because it's Foden and lots of people have got him, and Man City's attack is very good. But I was just having a look at how they've compared so far this season, and obviously, we've had this discussion before, haven't we, Joe? I think about how much you factor minutes into things. And, you know, Foden's stats are not as good as Madison's, and then you might have someone come along and be like, well, to be fair to him, he's not playing as many minutes. And then you go, well, that's the point. That's exactly the point. Foden is not a 90-minute man. Madison clearly is. And so when you look at what they've achieved so far this season, Madison's created two big chances, Foden's none. Madison's had 9 shots in the box, Foden's had just 4. Mm-hmm. 2 big chances for Madison, 1 for Foden. 9 shots on target for Madison, just 2 for Foden. And so their expected goal involvement is like miles apart, and there's not even penalties to consider here. So it's expected goal involvement for Madison at 3.42 for Madison, and Foden is 1.43. So that's basically 2 goals. It would maybe hurt, and it might hurt this week, but I actually feel like, you know, if Foden gets a haul, I'm not going to be shocked at that. But European football is coming up. I think that minute management for Foden is going to continue, possibly even get worse. And so even if it backfires this week, over the course of the next 6, I would be very, very surprised if Foden scores more points than Madison, because the fixtures stay good for Spurs, no rotation kind of anyway, and there's, you know, European football isn't going to impact Madison. I think if your team can afford to make what is arguably a luxury transfer, because Foden's not a bad option, it's a transfer probably well spent, because I do think it elevates both arguably the floor and the ceiling of your midfield. So,
well, my take is a slightly different. In the it's a running theme with the answers. Game week 5 is not the week to do the move. Game week 6, perhaps. Game week 7. This is why I didn't wildcard now. My team didn't particularly need it, but also I think there's certain teams with great fixtures game week 5 and terrible fixtures game week 6, and the reverse. So with Foden, yeah, he's got West Ham away, so if you've got Haaland, you're going to captain him. You maybe don't need Foden. Madison against Sheffield United is going to be a better pick. But then game week 6, you've got Foden against Nottingham Forest at home, which is he's in the scout picks for that one. And then he's got Wolves away. Meanwhile, Madison has got Arsenal away and Liverpool at home. So then I would favour Foden, you see. So I wouldn't make that move, because I think you'd possibly, Foden could outscore Madison in those 2 games. But yeah, granted, longer term, game week 8, yeah, it's, you know, it's much better. You've got, if Foden has got Arsenal away and Tottenham, back to good fixtures. You've got Luton away, and the good fixtures run continues. But yeah, I mean, there's an opportunity cost with all these types of moves. I am not that kind of player that looks at a good player in my team and thinks, I know, I'm going to get rid of him for another good player. Because unless there's a dramatic turn in the fixtures. But I think there's a cost there. And that's why I haven't made any midfield moves. No, I made 1 midfield move. I got Sterling in. I can't even remember who I got rid of. For Sterling, must have been good. I know, it was Martinelli, and that move was ultimately,
I didn't wonder if it was an Arsenal.
I've got rid of Martinelli for Sterling a couple of weeks ago, and ultimately that move's cost me 3 points, because Martinelli got an assist over that time, and I got Sterling in after his hat trick, because obviously a points chasing. Let's have a look at these fixtures, these questions rather. Jack Flash Poet, Ward Prowse as an enabler. Bad fixtures, but also fixture proof. He's exactly your kind of player, possibly to both of us there. Yes, he's exactly my kind of player. He's you think he could score at any time against anyone, because he's got amazing free kicks. Penalties are not up for grabs currently at West Ham, but if they were, I would imagine he would get them. But West Ham, yeah, they've got Man City at home, then Liverpool, then Sheffield United. That's great. But then Newcastle, Aston Villa, that gets better with a nice, lovely run of Everton, Brentford, Nottingham Forest, Burnley and Crystal Palace. So sort of game week 9 is the Ward-Prowse time. You see the theme emerging here. Now is, for me, is not the Ward-Prowse week. But yeah, I think he may be in my wild card around game week 9-ish. If I can't afford Bowen, for example, if he goes up in price.
I was just going to mention Bowen, yeah, because I think that's the decision that people have got to make. Because I do think that paying the extra... Well, what we've seen so far is that paying the extra million on Bowen probably is going to be rewarded. It's just what that's going to cost you. In isolation, I think Bowen's going to get more points. Can Ward-Prowse match Bowen sufficiently to allow a bigger leverage of sort of, you know, gains in other areas of your team? And so it is going to be team specific, especially as you say, game week 9, that seems the perfect time to wildcard, because we talked about Forest as one team that gets good around that time. And we've talked about, like, Chelsea gets worse, for example. Newcastle's get better. Palace gets better. West Ham is another team who right now we don't really want to be invested in. The fixtures are really poor. They get really good. Mm-hmm. So it's another game week 9 specific question, because who the must-haves by then may dictate the answer to this. But yeah, in terms of what we've seen so far, I think the extra million on Bowen would work, because Interestingly enough, he has actually created more chances than Ward-Prowse, although Ward-Prowse is creating them at a faster rate because he played fewer minutes. But the goal threat is kind of no comparison. 9 shots in the box for Bowen, just the 2 for Ward-Prowse. 4 big chances for Bowen, just the 1 for Ward-Prowse. 6 shots on target compared to Ward-Prowse's 2, and then the XGI is 2.77 to 1.36. So there is quite a big gap. And 1 million is not really that much to jump from X to Y. So yeah. I think Bowen is still the front runner, but I don't think Ward-Prowse is bad. As I said, it just depends on what you're doing elsewhere.
So, yeah, million is not a lot. It's basically what Brighton give Chelsea every single second of the year. And on that segue, Stephen Gallagher asks, Mitoma to Maddison, or if Nunez is out, go for a cheeky Jota punt. Well, I've already given my views about Jota. I think he's pretty much nailed to start number 9 if Nunez is out. So do monitor that situation. We've got team news tomorrow, and Neil will better give everyone much more information. Mitoma to Maddison. I'd be tempted to make that move. Mitoma does not have the best of luck against Wan-Bissaka, who is likely to play against Manchester United. Wan-Bissaka is Mitoma kryptonite. And so I think even though Mitoma has Bournemouth next, he then has Aston Villa, Liverpool, Man City after that. So it's not a great run for Brighton. And at the same time, they've got Europa League commitments. And I expect Mitoma. So there, Brighton's group is really tough. So I expect their top side, of which Matoma's in, to play that one. So yeah, I would do that. If I'm Mitoma, even as a Brighton fan, I would look, and didn't have Maddison, I'd make that move myself. Don't make you. Yeah.
Well, the thing about that I find really interesting about Mitoma is, from what I can see, I mean, I've not watched as many of the Brighton games as I perhaps wanted to this season. You may well have seen a lot more than me, but the thing about Mitoma is, from what we saw last season, both eye test, anecdotally and statistically, was that he was a shot heavy guy. He was a volume shooter whose accuracy actually wasn't brilliant, but it didn't matter because he shot so often that the law of averages would suggest that eventually one of them's going to go in. And of course, that's what we saw. He was more of a goal threat. But what we've seen so far, I kind of feel like it looks like he's becoming more of a creative player for Brighton so far, because he's created 14 chances, which is among some of the most creative in the league so far. 3 of those have been big chances. Again, he's really keeping fine company for that. But he's had just 7 shots in the box. So that's actually that's under 2 a game for someone who last season was shooting all the time. Only 1 big chance and just 2 shots on target. So in a way, he has started scoring well. But if he's becoming an assist man,
well, I think he's always been an assist man. He basically just runs as close as he can get to goal. And then shoots if he's in that position. And if not, he does a chinky run and then gets into that position. Or he'll make that pass. It's possible that, the way Brighton we've now got Pedro up front. We've got Fati from Barcelona. And of course, we've got Ferguson and Welbeck as well. So you've got a lot of heads and feet to aim at, of quality feet and heads as well to aim at. So yeah, it's more likely they're going to pilfer some of those goals that he would got. But I do understand that March and Mitoma have had a challenge set down by De Zerbi to score more goals and to get, I think it was up to 15 this season, which may have been. So I don't think there's any drop off there. It's quite a small sample so far. He's a great player, especially in the good fixtures. Absolutely. But there are certain players, of which Wan-Bissaka's one, who can get the better of him. So he's good, but not
great. Interesting thing just seems to be that they seem to swap their roles, in the sense that I saw March as more of a creator, but he does seem to be getting better at putting chances away. Yes. Because he, so far, 3 big chances, 6 shots on target. You know, in those 2 stats alone, I appreciate, as you said, it's a small sample size, March is actually outperforming Mitoma at the moment. And I guess the general point is, I'm not seeing enough explosiveness from Mitoma. Fantastic player, but as you say, the goals increasingly becoming shared at Brighton. Whereas Maddison is the central hub at Spurs. Very, very different.
Yeah, March is more explosive because it's just the way they play on the left and the right. So you've got Estupinan, Mitoma, or you've got March, and it could be Gross, Veltman, Milner. It could be any of those players. Often they're not as attacking. Whereas on the left-hand side, you've got Mitoma and Estupinan. So Mitoma can quite easily pass it to Estupinan, who can quite easily run into the box and score, or running the box near the box and doing an amazing cross. Whereas on the right-hand side, when it was March and Gross, they overlapped a bit more, and now March will be a bit more attacking, I think. But I mean, this goes back to pre-season. Who is the best Brighton asset? Against Manchester United, it's Pascal Gross. It could be any of them. It could be any of them. I mean, you could perhaps have all three, and then you've got Pedro and Ferguson. But you get that with these teams where there's rotation and a lot of talent, but it's all spread around. And Aston Villa's a little bit like that, I think. So, I mean, I'll put your team up now, actually, just because don't go into too much detail, but I'll put it up because it's obviously typical of a number of teams. In that the players are the same. You've got Maddison, so lots of questions about Maddison. You've got Foden, people thinking of moving Foden for Maddison. You don't have to deal with that. Diaby, you've got over, say, Watkins. Now, are you happy with Diaby? You're going to keep him? You think there's going to be any rotation?
I'm fairly happy so far. I think Watkins has been unfortunate, and so therefore I think I've been fortunate in that little 50-50. Because I think Watkins probably should have been involved in more goals than he has been. But I do think that Diaby, I wouldn't be shocked if Diaby has a better overall point scoring season, because of course he is just going to get more rewarded. I felt that I liked Villa.
Yeah.
I liked their fixtures. I thought they were going to come in and start really well, which I think they largely have, Newcastle game aside. And I felt, okay, I can't actually fit Watkins in my team, but if I rate that attack, and I actually did the scout report video on Diaby over the summer, which was based on a fantastic article by the editorial team, and I had to say I was really excited by what I saw. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of encouraging signs, and I think that's largely continued. I don't have too many stats to hand about Diaby, and as I said, Watkins arguably should have been involved in more goals than him. Mm-hmm. But I if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think there's a lot of people looking at ways they can get involved in the Aston Villa attack, for example. I mean, the Chelsea game doesn't scare me anymore. I mean, I was thinking about maybe moving them out by game week 6 or 7, but I actually not bothered anymore, because Chelsea, not as good defensively as we thought. Brighton, as we've discussed at length, will concede goals. You know, you will probably win that game 4-3. And if Diaby gets 2 goals and assists, I don't care.
I guess if you're looking at them sort of on paper, Chelsea and Brighton could do well, but it's hard to call, but could do well. But it's really from game week 8 where Diaby...
That's the thing, after that.
Diaby or Watkins is on my radar, because it's this beautiful run of Wolves, West Ham, Luton, Nottingham Forest, Fulham, before Tottenham in game week 13. That feels like an age away. So you've got this amazing long run of great fixtures. I want Diaby or Watkins, but so many midfielders we want. And it brings on to another question from Engzeisman. Is Saka injured? So he was, there's been talk that I think it was in the one of the tabloids, that he'd been on England duty, he's been nursing a long-standing Achilles issue. So you can look at that one of two ways. One is that's a hint he might be rested this week. But if it's a long-standing one, it's a long-standing one. We'll just play through it. Arteta, in my memory, has only benched Saka once. When he's been available, Saka's only been benched once.
Yeah, illness.
Yeah, and he still came on and got something in that game.
So
unless we hear something definite, he's a hold for me. But if he is out, I'll just swap him to Son. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, I've got it's an easy switch.
That's a very easy switch. So if you don't have Son, Saka's injured, just make that move. We've got a deadline Saturday, thank God, because I'm away tomorrow. and Fridays have been a bit of a nightmare trying to make your decisions. Although I'm blessed usually doing the team news with Neil, so I get all that information straight. But then I've only got like about an hour to like decipher it all. I'm quite pleased.
Well, the advantage that we have now is Friday nights we will get the embargoed section of the press conferences before the deadline. Because for people who aren't aware, there's obviously there's the embargo for the written press, which just allows all of the journalists for none of them to steal a march on each other. It's actually quite antiquated, to be honest. And I say that even as someone who's worked in sports journalism. But it's there, it still happens, and it does sometimes mean that we get like the news on the Thursday, Friday, we get the deadline at 6:30, and then at 10:30, there's an additional quote from Pep who goes, oh, John Stones, I'm not sure, we'll see, right? We will get all of that before the deadline. And so Yeah, the handy thing is this story about Saka has got big enough in the national press. I will be very, very, very shocked if someone in that room doesn't ask Arteta. Yeah. Hopefully we get some information. Yeah. I mean, you know, long-standing Achilles issues. I mean, people have been having problems with that since the Trojan War.
Exactly.
So, you know, 'twas ever thus.
Yes. It's always been an issue there. I think with Saka, yeah, we'll get some kind of definite. We'll get some kind of leak Saturday morning. But if it's a long-standing issue, it's just a long-standing issue, and it'll just be made to play through it all. Let's race through some more of these questions. We've done about 45 minutes. Can we do more? We got time for more, David?
I think so. Yeah, we can stick a few more in.
We'll rattle through some more. I've got a bit more time. SMB says Az and Sam look like they've had a rough week. Thanks very much. let's have a look through. Kamsi has caught us on the our pronunciation of a one ye. Blimey! I mean,
I've seen people start talking about this, and I'm realizing maybe I need to sort myself out.
To be honest, Kamsi, that's the least your worries with our pronunciation of footballers. I think he's got off quite lightly. I've just put the game week 5 fixtures just to remind people watching what those fixtures are, and I can draw them so I can remember who Newcastle are playing, for example. Okay, Dennis Robertson, how much effect does European football tend to make with player rotation? I want to bring in Diaby, but think his Premier League minutes may get reduced. Diaby, I don't think he played international, did he?
Was he not asking about European rotation as well?
Yeah, he's asking about European rotation, but specifically with Diaby. But yeah, I would say, in principle, yes. I haven't used any bench players yet. Every week after the internationals, it's the most unpredictable week. This is why I don't like wildcarding too much early on after the first international break. And I will go. I'm trying to remember who the Leicester player is who I said I'll go that deep. I can't remember who it was now.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But
Nampalis Mendy or something.
I could be going Bayer deep. Who knows? He's my third bench player this week from Burnley. But I anticipate you going into a first or even second sub. I think that happens. But I don't know. We did a European roundup video yesterday with Mark, and also Neil has been compiling everything from the site. Neil and Tom, lots of articles at Fantasy Football Scout. We'll give you all those questions about Diaby. It gives you a rundown of who's played the most minutes as well. So if there's a player you're thinking of getting in, but you think, oh, will they be tired? It shows you who's played 180 minutes, and there's a hell of a lot of players. So have a look at that list. It's on the Fantasy Football Scout. Just have a look at the European Roundup article. It's one of the last three or four on the site. Okay, let's rattle through some more questions. Okay, Danny B, start Pedro or Edouard? I like this question.
I mean, I'd start Pedro. I think he's gone down in price.
Yeah.
Good differential now because people have got rid. And the thing is, I don't think getting rid of him when we got rid of him, because people either did it game week 2 or 3, I don't think that was the wrong decision at the time. But circumstances have shifted in that Suso's got an injury, Welbeck's got an injury, United's defence doesn't look very good. Pedro is not a bad option in that team. We're fairly confident he's going to start. I would be this week, to be honest. Do obviously wait for the press conferences. And of course, on Friday, we will have another team news video with Neil. So that's an opportunity to pick his brains on the rotation with the Seagulls. So Pedro this week, I think, is actually a good shout. And until we get some news suggesting that this injury, not crisis, it's not quite at that stage yet, but this sort of, you know, increase in injuries in that specific position, until that starts to subside, I think Pedro still has a little bit more value.
Okay, well, I'm just going to put a picture of my team up. I won't dwell on it too long, but it's just a bit of Ferguson. So I've got Ferguson in there, not only so I can earn more smug points for nailing his hat trick last time out, but he promptly then got injured and was off international duty. In my local paper, my former employers, the Brighton and Hove Argus, did some training pictures. Welbeck is back in training. Happy. He's there training away. Ferguson was not pictured at all. So even if Ferguson is okay, the fact that he hasn't been pictured training so far, and we're getting closer and closer to that match, would suggest that it's Welbeck's going to start. Who's going to be behind him? I think it will be either Pedro or Lallana. So I wouldn't say Pedro's 100%, but with a Ferguson being injured or likely to be injured, as we'll get more in team news tomorrow on this, I think that Pedro is more likely to start. So I would say keep him. Game week six, faces Bournemouth, but Ferguson could be back then, and of which Edouard has Fulham at home. So Edouard's the guy there. The other reason I put up my team up there, just because other people might have a striker they want to get rid of, in my case, because he might not play. I think Morris is probably the best one, because game week seven, everyone's going to want him for Luton. And I think you're just making that move a little bit early. And then Luton,
yeah.
Looking at the fixtures, Luton have Fulham, really the worst defence, and then Wolves, and then Everton and Burnley, obviously, in game week seven. So it's a really nice run of fixtures there. So I think he would be a top choice. So the answer to that question, start Pedro and Edouard, we think would be Pedro this week. For that place, in the short term, maybe Morris is the answer.
Yeah, I think if you look at the four matches Luton have up next in their next three, because obviously there's a double, all four of them are in the bottom six in the Premier League for minutes per expected goals conceded. I think, but waiting 1 week, just double check that Morris can actually deliver on that, I think is relatively shrewd. I think you might get rewarded if you go this week, but you know, I would personally, I mean, I'm thinking about him as well. Just he's a bit of an opportunity, because I think a lot of people will just write that double game week off, but like purely because of Emmanuel Dennis, which makes no sense, because they're completely different players. They might both flop, but just because he did, and just because he got sent off, and there's all these double game weeks with the terrible strikers, it doesn't necessarily mean Morris will. So I think we do need to keep an eye on these fixtures, because they are good fixtures.
Yeah. We're going to rattle through these ones. We'll go really quick on these ones, and then at the end, I'll put up a rate my team of the best players for game week five. This is the Rate My Team tool. And so it gives a snapshot of what the computer, the XG boffins behind it, believe are going to be the highest scoring players. And hopefully that will answer any other questions we haven't managed to get to. So we'll quick ones here. Josh, Asenu start Gvardiol or Estupinan, easy, start the Man City guy. You agree?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Choco asks, so Mitoma to Mbeumo is viable? Yes, indeed. Mbeumo is a great pick. Mitoma is a great pick, but bad fixtures. One's got good fixtures, one hasn't. Any news on Shaw? We don't have any news on Luke Shaw at the moment. Still injured. Still.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, you're not sure. Karima, should I keep Isak? It's another game week five. It's not the week to ask that question. If you've got him, field him, but he could be rotated for Wilson, and we're not going to know that until Champions League kicks in.
You'd be kicking yourself if you sell him now, and then you need him maybe even next week, because that's when the fixtures get better.
Exactly. It could be that Wilson just keeps coming on after every after 70 minutes. Could be that Wilson gets a start. But I definitely would want that guy, but it's which one is it going to be? And we haven't got room for both. FPL Songs, Rob, game week six. Is this a question? He's just saying it. No, he's just listing loads of players and who they're facing.
He could be singing it.
He could be singing it. Yanga, sell Foden to Son. I think we've had this question before. If you can do it, Son is in demand, but then you look at the Man City fixtures after that and Son's fixtures. So lots more questions. Everyone's asking the same question, people to Son. Yes, Son's a good player, but look out for game week six and seven. Just going down until we get a question. Bench is Stupinan or Wissa? That's a tough one.
That's a very niche question.
Yeah.
It's really tough. I think I wouldn't want to really bench either. I mean, whenever people ask these questions and it's like bench one or the other, I always like to wheel out a very... people will be tired of me saying this, but I know you'll certainly agree, Joe. Build a team that means you don't have to make this decision every week. And so it might sound crazy, but like maybe sell one of them and get a 4.5 who you feel more confident benching. Or sell someone else. There might be someone in your team who you're starting out of habit who actually should be sold. And then maybe they're the person that you downgrade to someone really, really cheap so that you can start Visser in a Supernan. I think largely I try not to bench forwards, but Newcastle's defence looks very good. Man United doesn't look very good. And as you said, a Supernan's a winger now. So it's a tricky one.
They're both poor this week and both great game week six. Have great fixtures for game week six, but in game week five, not great. So yeah, you got to feel one. Honestly, this isn't scientific. Literally, flip a coin, because both of them could blank or get you something. My instinct would be go with Wissa. Just go with the attacking guy, who's definitely the attacking guy. If Wan-Bissaka can get the better of Matoma, that might free up space for Stupinan to have a cheeky run. I don't know if you saw that picture, the footage of him get Trippier trying to tackle Stupinan just glided past Trippier, who looked flailing around, which was amazing. Janko asked, just joined, anyone considering Darwin? We spoke about Darwin earlier. He was subbed off after 45 minutes for Uruguay. Watch this space, watch team news tomorrow. We don't know yet. I would imagine Jota may start in his place if he is still fit. Lots more questions. Lots of questions about Foden to Son or Foden to Sterling is one. I think once again, game week six is the sort of more Chelsea. Chelsea are on borrowed time for me. I've got Sterling, and if anyone's going to go in game week six, it'll be him if he blanks against Bournemouth. But Sterling, historically, I remember, does really well against Bournemouth. Did for Man City, but.
Very true, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to
was that goal he scored that was very late once.
Yes.
Didn't it not result in... Didn't he get sent off for him jumping in the crowd? And I remember Aguero getting very angry with the fan.
I was listening to that game. I think it was a lunchtime kickoff. I was listening to the game. I remember I was on a dog walk and I was like, "Hey, my player Sterling has scored. Oh, what's happening now?" And then, yeah, just I couldn't even work out the points on the dog walk. You know, he scored, gets sent off. Just on and on. Okay, chaos. We're going to put the some rate my team stats up just to end off with. What I've got the first top 12 players in terms of points game week five. So this is Rate My Team to Fantasy Football Scale in the members area. Do have a look at that. Most of the stats that we've been talking about here, they all come from there. The season ticker there, that's how we're able to reel off all these fixtures seemingly at will. We both got fixture ticker open us on a different screen. And Haaland is top. He's expected to get 7 points. That's the best player this week. Son is next, 5.79. Then Madison, 5.57. Salah just behind. So all of these are good captaincy shouts here. Sterling is just behind at 5.26. So this could be a good fixture for Sterling. He's certainly a real benchmark for him, whether he stays in my team or not. Trippier, we're starting to see interest in Newcastle here. He's expected to go over 5 points. Foden is next for Man City. So lots of questions. Shall I sell Foden for Son? Well, you might not actually make much difference in your team. Awoniyi, who I've mispronounced, thanks Camsey, is around 5 as well, points for game week 5. Basically, these predicted are points. This is basically, if you're getting 7 points, you're probably going to get 12. That's the way it works out on these. You're looking at these points here. They basically, anything over 5 or even 4, you expect to do quite well that week. Diaby in your team, David, so this bodes well for your team. Mm. Bruno Fernandes is next. Rashford's also on the list. Watkins and Saka, should he play, facing Everton. So these are the key players to have. It's a question of how many you own. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I've got 6 of them. And I think you might have
more than me.
I think
I've got 5, I think.
You got 5. And
this might as well knock one off that list because we both have Haaland.
Yeah. So I've got Fernandes and Rashford. And they both great form for their country. But you don't have either. So
I do have a plan to get Bruno.
That's what we're going to end with. What's your transfer plan for this week then?
Yeah. Well, I probably won't make any transfers this week. I am going to hope that rely on Gabriel to start against Everton. I'm going to wait to see what happens at the press conference. So, because I'd rather not have to rely on a stupid man. But I guess if I end up having to, that's fine. I think if Gabriel starts for Arsenal against Everton, I'd be relatively confident of a clean sheet. But it's in terms of the alternatives, I don't want to get Destiny Udogie now because I wouldn't want to start him against Arsenal or Liverpool. So he's an obvious switch this week, but it's very short term. I think transfer the pressure. So I think holding one when I've got a little bit of a potential sort of like dicey affair with with one of my 11 guys who I want to start when I've got a stupid man on the bench who's not a bad substitute. I think that leaving that be is fine. If that allows me to have two free transfers to play with things a little bit. I mean, I won a wild card in game week 9, but if I can use my free transfers to build a wild card team of sorts before then, and I can do it, use it later, all the better. I don't want Fernandes this week, because even though Brighton's defence hasn't been amazing, Brighton are very much a bit of a kind of sort of like, you know, they're kryptonite for United these days, and United haven't been amazing. But I did do a video on the channel last week, so people have not had a chance to check this out, of, you know, actually, should we be talking about buying Bruno Fernandes instead of selling him? I do think we should, because his stats are very good, the fixtures are going to get very nice. And so I don't know who's going to come out yet. It might be Foden, based around European rotation, perhaps impacting him. Maybe.
So you're looking at that Burnley, that Burnley game in game week 6 is your Manchester United entry point.
I think so. Either that, or maybe see how that one goes and then look a bit later. But I feel like Fernandes is an opportunity for people right now, purely because everyone's getting rid of him. And actually, I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that you maybe should be buying him. And as I said, there's a whole video on that specifically from last week. If people want to check it out. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy with Fernandes and Rashford myself. So just for those listening to the podcast version, David has Turner in goal, Cash, Gabriel, Chilwell in a 3-5-2 with Maddison and Bomo, Diaby, Foden, Saka. And then you've got Jackson and Haaland up top, who's your captain. And you've got Flecken, Estupinan, Archer and Anderson on the bench. And for my team, I put it up on goals imminent, but I'll just read it out anyway. I've got Turner, Diaz, Chilwell and Estupinan so far in a 3-5-2 with Maddison, Rashford, Fernandes, Saka and Sterling. Ferguson, who's likely to be out this match against Haaland. I've got Henry. I did that, didn't I? Goals imminent as well. I upgraded him to Thierry Henry. Henry, Onana and Archer and Bayer on my bench there. The moves I'm going to make will depend on team news. If Ferguson is out long term or at least another match, I'll swap him to Morris. But if he's fit for Bournemouth, I'll just bench him. Estupinan, I would like as my first sub, like you've got, David. So I would be looking to upgrade Henry to Adoghi, possibly, because Adoghi and Estupinan actually rotate quite nicely over the next few weeks before I wildcard in game week 8, 9, 10-ish. So that's my sort of plan, but a bit vague. All depends on team news. It's going to be busy because of all the international games that have been taking place. For all those listening and watching, do remember to press that like button, and also whether you've liked it or not, just press it. And also do remember to subscribe so you don't miss all of our content. We've reeled off some of the content, and we've had all the videos and podcasts on various issues this week. Do have a look, scroll through our YouTube channel, have a look. Lots of interesting things there. I do recommend Goals Imminent with myself and Tom on Tuesday, obviously. And team news with Neil. That's the biggie and really important this week, so that'll be tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. Do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from as well. David, thanks so much for joining me. Normal service will resume next week, I presume.
Hopefully.
And Sam will be back. Well, you never know, we could be called on again.
As and Sam should be back.
Fancy Football Scout could be going Joe and David deep onto their bench here. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for those who joined us. Take care, and we'll see you soon.